Women in the United States first gained the nationwide right to vote a century ago. But not all women could exercise the rights guaranteed under the 19th Amendment. Black women in many states faced the same situation as black men, with a long list of legal restrictions that effectively barred them from voting and mob violence when they tried to exercise that right. But black women continued to work to get the right to vote and to overturn racial discrimination in the years to follow, playing a crucial role in the civil rights movement. That's just one part of the story our guest tells in her new book about the leading role black women have played in American politics from the beginning of the nation. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have for our guest about the role black women have historically played in the fight for civil rights? If you've been involved in these movements, or maybe you have a story from a mother, grandmother, aunt, we want to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Martha S. Jones is the Society of Black Alumni Presidential Professor and Professor of History at Johns Hopkins University. Her new book is called Vanguard: How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. Martha, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, this book, of course, is part of your work as a historian, but you write in your introduction you were inspired by women from your own family. Can you talk about their story a little bit and how they inspired you here?
That is right. I was more than halfway through researching and writing this book when I realized that I actually didn't know the stories of the women in my own family. Where had they been in 1920? Had they been able to cast their ballots? And so I wound up taking a sort of detour. I didn't tell my editor, but I did take a detour to look into some of this family history. I'm somebody who works in an office with the women in my family hanging on the wall, kind of looking over my shoulder. And I knew that many of them were descended from an enslaved woman who had lived in Danville, Kentucky in the 19th century, Nancy Bell Graves. And in 1920, indeed, my grandmother, her mother, and her mother's mother were all living and at least seemingly eligible to vote. But I didn't have as easy a time as I thought I would as a historian tracking them down. And one of the reasons was that someone like my grandmother, when she finally did tell the story of her experience with voting rights, she didn't talk about 1920 and the 19th Amendment at all. That her important touchstone in this story was the 1950s and the 1960s and the years of the modern civil rights movement. And this was really a lesson for me in what happens when you center African-American women in this story. It turns out that while the 19th Amendment may have been a milestone of sorts, you couldn't end the story there. You had to come all the way forward until the civil rights era, until finally the passage of the Voting Rights Act 45 years later in 1965.
And you begin the story you tell more than 100 years before the Voting Rights Act, before the 19th Amendment, I should say, I'm sorry, and found that black women have played big roles in fighting for change from the very dawn of the United States. Can you talk some about the early days?
Sure. One of my puzzles was to look at very contemporary black women political leaders, look at their ideas and ask, where did those ideas come from? And you start to pull a thread into the past. And when I did, and in particular, I was looking for the roots of the critique that black women still bring to American politics, which is a vision for American politics of a terrain without racism, a terrain without sexism. And it turns out that those ideas really do have their origins in the earliest decades of the 19th century, where black women are not yet talking expressly about political rights, not talking exactly about the vote, but are developing a political philosophy that decries the ways in which racism and sexism are keeping them from public life, keeping them from leadership, keeping them from shaping the nation going forward. That turns out to be the origins of a story that in just a few decades will turn explicitly to the question of then voting rights.
a consistent theme through a lot of the book seems to be the idea that Black women kept being asked to choose. Are you going to work for women or are you going to work for Black people? And the answer was yes, both. But that wasn't always easy. Can you talk about that challenge?
Yeah. To the contrary, Black women, as you suggest, whether it's in anti-slavery societies or civil rights organizations or in women's suffrage associations, frequently meet up with people who aim to be allies, but really ask too much of Black women. And the response by African-American women is to build their own political organizations so that, for example, by the 1890s, Black women are founding not a suffrage association, but the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs. And in that organization, they can work, yes, for civil rights, and also for women's votes. And that really is the ideal political setting for the women I read about in Vanguard.
And that speaks to another theme I see in the book, that Black women keep finding places to find power, even if they're excluded from the ways people might traditionally think about power, even if they're not allowed to vote themselves. They advocate in other ways, create organizations, create newspapers, work within churches. Can you talk about that that ability to find places to work, even when they're locked out of what we think of as the corridors of power?
Sure. You know, Vanguard would have been a very short book if a pamphlet, in fact, if I had set out to only chronicle that part of our history in which Black women can fully vote. That for much of this story, too many African-American women are disenfranchised. And part of what is fascinating is that that doesn't keep them, as you suggest, from being political actors, from exerting influence in politics, but they have to find their own ways. Sometimes that means being allies to African-American men. This is certainly true after the Civil War, where Black women will expect Black men who have themselves, most of them, come to the polls for the very first time to not only heed the perspectives of women, but to cast their ballots as a community vote, representing everyone in the community. Black women, when we get to the years after the 19th Amendment, when too many of them will be still disenfranchised, especially in the American South, will, for example, come to Washington. They'll learn to use lobbying. They'll learn to use organizing. They'll learn to use political patronage in order to affect influence in the city of Washington in those critical years when the nation is recovering from the Depression. So these are all lessons, of course, in how one goes about constructing political power without access to the ballot. The most important, or I should say, perhaps better put, the most best remembered chapter in that story, of course, is the modern civil rights movement itself, where we know Black women are part of the tens of thousands of Black Americans who are going to use direct nonviolent action in an effort to force the hand of Congress, force the hand of Lyndon Johnson, and resulting in the Voting Rights Act in 1965. All of these are, if you will, facets of Black women's political repertoire. And it's only in 1965 that we can talk wholly and concertedly about political rights in a narrow sense, casting a ballot or running for office.
We're talking to Martha Jones. Her new book is Vanguard, How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. Martha, you share so many stories of people who maybe should have been household names or I should have been more familiar with. I want to meet at least a few of them today. I'll throw a couple names at you. Mary Ann Shad Carey. She goes to, Windsor, Ontario, starts a newspaper before the Civil War, ends up recruiting for the Union Army. Can you share some of her story?
Sure. Like many of the women in Vanguard, Mary Ann Shad Carey will begin her work life, if you will, as a teacher. And she will, as you suggest, be among those Black Americans who in the 1850s, in the decade before the Civil War, are so deeply discouraged about their prospects in the United States that they migrate away. And in her case, she settles in what is today Ontario in Canada, Toronto and London in Canada. She is looking for a way, as we've talked about, to not only realize her own political aspirations, but to really wield political influence even from afar. And she founds a newspaper, the Provincial Freeman. And here now she creates a platform not only for herself, but for many exiled Black Americans, including Black women. And when we go back to that paper, we can appreciate the ways in which she is, in her own way, campaigning for women's full political equality. She will come back to the United States in the era of the Civil War, recruit for the Union Army, as you suggest, and then by the 1870s, she will be settled in Washington, D.C., where she is a full-fledged suffragist, very early in that movement, and part of a, how can we put it, a confrontational wing of that movement that in the District of Columbia is going to make a concerted effort to have Congress change the laws, remove sex restrictions from voting rights, and Mary Ann Shank Carey will be a part of those broiling scenes in Washington, D.C., where women confront registrars, where they gather in large crowds, all in an effort to continue the work that she had been doing since the 1850s in Canada, which is championing the full political rights of American women, Black and white.
We're talking to Martha S. Jones right now, professor of history at Johns Hopkins University. Her new book is called Vanguard: How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the role Black women have played in political movements throughout American history? Have you seen Black women work within these movements? How have you seen them work within those movements? If this is your story or someone in your own family, give us a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Now we continue our conversation about the role Black women have played historically in advocating for civil rights in the United States. Our guest is Martha S. Jones, professor of history at Johns Hopkins University, author of the book Vanguard: How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All. Martha, I want to meet another figure in your book, a powerful figure, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. A quote that struck me, she's speaking at the Equal Rights Association in, I think, 1866. The quote, "You white women speak of rights, I speak of wrongs," and highlighting some of the differences that she wanted to advocate for, not choosing between advocating for just women or just for Black people. Can you introduce us to her?
Sure. Another former teacher, a poet, and a seasoned anti-slavery lecturer by the time in 1866, she joins the Equal Rights Association, coming together with an old radical coalition of women's rights advocates and abolitionists to think about the future, a future where slavery is behind them, where the prospect of citizenship and full civil rights is right on the horizon. And the question for this coalition is, who will enjoy voting rights, by what terms? And Watkins Harper knows that this coalition is in danger of fracturing between those who are advocating, on the one hand, that African-American men should go first and be among the first to win new voting rights in this climate, and those who insist that women, in particular white middle-class women, should be among the first now to enjoy new citizenship rights in the wake of the Civil War and the rewriting of the Constitution. Watkins Harper isn't having it, if you will, because, of course, this, as you suggested earlier, requires her to choose, right? And she sees herself and understands her political position as both that of a woman and of a Black American. And she challenges everybody in that meeting, if you will, to a higher vision, one that is not a politics that is fractured by the fact of race or the fact of sex. The line I love from her remarks is this one. She says, we are all bound up together in one great bundle of humanity. And at this moment, Watkins Harper is really charting out a new vision for Black women's politics, one that she will champion the rest of her life, but one that will really take hold among and between Black women who understand that their political power, their political possibilities are not merely the fulfillment of individual or even group goals, but really are intended and must be put to the purpose of what today we would call human rights. Frances Ellen Watkins Harper sets the bar very high in 1866 and challenges people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass to meet that challenge.
And that leads to a slogan adopted by one of the national groups you write about. You adopted as one of your own chapter titles, Lifting as We Climb. And this is another theme in your book that Black women are advancing human rights for all. Can you talk about that?
Sure. The National Association of Colored Women is founded in 1896 out of this vision. And it is an organization that by the end of, or by the beginning of the First World War, will include 300,000 Black women organized across the country under the auspices of this national organization. Lifting as We Climb is a philosophy, right, that says some of us may have had the advantage and the possibility, say, of education. Some of us may have had the advantage or the possibility of a vocation like teaching. But the role of this organization is to bring all women on board, to move all women forward. And in the case of the NACW, that means, yes, working toward women's suffrage, right? Women's voting rights and the road to the 19th Amendment. And at the same time, for example, championing anti-lynching legislation, which is one of the signature causes of the NACW. So Lifting as We Climb, yes, speaks to the concerns of women, but it acknowledges that Black women's concerns extend far beyond questions of sex.
One more name I want to throw in here to talk about how long it took from 1920 and the 19th Amendment to many Black women celebrating their first vote, Jo Ella Moore in 1965, casting her first vote at age 70. Can you talk about her story and that significance?
You know, Jo Ella Moore, and I hope you had a chance to see the wonderful portrait of her that is in Vanguard, because this is how I first met her in a museum exhibition, where a photograph of her with her arm lifted, taking that oath that finally, after seven attempts, she is able to, in 1965, in the wake of the Voting Rights Act, join the voter rolls in Prentiss, Mississippi. This is a story about the kind of fortitude that it takes and how the work of Black women to win full voting rights is a project that extends out across generations. But what we know undergirds Jo Ella Moore's raised hand is a great deal of risk, is a great deal of sacrifice, is a great deal of violence that women like she and others have had to endure in order to, if you will, enjoy the fruits of their labor and finally have their names added to the voters' rolls.
You share so many names and stories of people you're able to find in archives and photos and more. At one point in talking about the civil rights movement, you talk about all the women whose names are never going to be out there in the public, maybe just in family legend. What do you think about that legacy of so many women who probably did a lot of work, maybe at the local level, that we don't have that paper trail for anymore?
Yeah, you know, in Vanguard, I've tried to chronicle many women, some of them well-known, some of them whose names you might be learning for the first time. But you're right to point out that running through this story are many women whose names I even don't have the opportunity to invoke. And I hope that Vanguard is a conversation starter, whether it's in your family or in your church community, in your club, or in your book group, I hope that Vanguard is the place where you might start to ask questions about the women in your own family, like I did, about the women in your community, the history of your community, and the story of women's voting rights, that there are so many histories still to be recovered, to be told, to be written. And I hope that in that sense, Vanguard is just the beginning of a new chapter in the telling of how Black women have come to power and how they have used political power over a very long history.
In our last minute and a half or so, you write in your conclusion that a lot of Black women leaders of today are in fact very conscious of the history you share and see themselves as standing on the shoulders of the people you're writing about.
Kamala Harris in August of 2020 accepted the Democratic nomination. She invoked the names of six women. I'll quickly tick them. Mary Church Terrell, Ida B. Wells, Mary McLeod Bethune, Fannie Lou Hamer, Diane Nash, and Constance Baker Motley. Our time won't permit me to offer up the biographies of those women, but I will say that I think now Vice President-elect Harris has given us all homework and the responsibility to learn this other chapter in the nation's political history, learn who the founders are for her political career, the women on whose shoulders she stands. And I hope folks will know those names before too long in this new political moment.
Martha, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Martha S. Jones is the Society of Black Alumni Presidential Professor and Professor of History at Johns Hopkins University. She joined us to talk about her latest book. It's called Vanguard: How Black Women Broke Barriers, Won the Vote, and Insisted on Equality for All.